Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. The makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of star-studded entertainment from the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. Among those present, our guest of honor, lovely Rosalind Russell, star of The Citadel. And of course, Fanley Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Robert Young, Frank Morgan, Tony Martin, and Meredith Wilson, who gets our show underway with one of his grade-A arrangements of that grand rhythm number, Bojangles of Harlem. Gentlemen, your host for this evening.
Just a minute, son.
Yes, Mr. Morgan.
Bob Young won't be here for a few minutes, so I'll just take charge.
Yes, sir.
You're new around here, aren't you? What's your name?
My name is Warren Hull.
Warren Hull. Warren Hull, have I met you before?
Mr. Morgan, I joined the program last week.
Well, you seem a likely boy, Hull. But you want to watch your step around here so you don't get in wrong with the right people. You know who's boss of this program, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's fine.
When will Mr. Young be back?
You want to keep working, son, don't you?
Oh, you bet I do, Mr. Morgan. In fact, I have a list of suggestions here to improve the program.
Oh, well, if there's one thing we don't want on this program, it's suggestiveness.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I don't think you understood me, Mr. Morgan.
Entirely unnecessary, Hull. The important thing is for you to understand me. And from now on, I want you to call me...
I'm calling you Mr. Morgan, Mr. Morgan.
One at a time. Now, here's what I want you to do. In the first place, I want you to laugh. Heartily and frequently. Like Don Wilson on the Jack Benny program.
Oh, can we get him?
Get who?
Jack Benny.
I can see I'll have to get along without your cooperation. Here, just read this notice exactly as it's written.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, as an added feature of Frank Morgan's Good News program...
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Professor Morgan will be very happy to answer questions on any topic whatsoever during the program.
Yes.
Just telephone or telegraph Mr. Morgan at Maxwell House.
Yes.
What's
going on here?
And here is your host for this evening, Robert Young.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
Never mind that. I just heard this announcement of yours. You can't say such things over the air, Frank.
Well, I didn't say it, Bob. Hull said it.
Mr. Morgan told me to say it.
Stool pigeon.
All right. Frank, will you please tell me what's the idea of doing this in the first place?
Well, my dear boy, what radio needs is an uplifting educational quality.
Yeah.
Why is it that no one in all these years has ever thought of answering questions over the air?
Oh. Have you ever heard of Professor Quiz, of Information Please, Vox Pop, Battle of the Sexes, Man on the Street, Question Box, Ask It Basket? They all answer questions over the air.
They do?
Yes.
I've been stabbed. I haven't had the idea 15 minutes, and already I have 1,000 imitators. I'm going out and see my lawyer.
Lawyer? You'd better see a doctor. And listen, Hull, in the future, for your own good, pay no attention whatever to anything Frank says. Tony Martin, grand singing star from 20th Century Fox, brings you Mardi Gras from Ferdy Grofe's Mississippi Suite, with lyrics especially written for him by Dorcas Cochran. After hearing Tony sing this grand composition, I don't think you'll ever forget it. Make them remember.
Mardi Gras now is calling to you.
Hearts are gay, colors are bright, lovers play. This is a gala night, have your fun. You are the law, work is done this Mardi Gras. Come all you laugh, tonight is the night. Come all you girls, come into the light. Come all you clowns with faces of fright. Turn your cartwheels.
This is the night for young and for old.
See a boy all alone in the crowd. Clumsy boy, so all alone. Finding joy and fun he has never known. Heart and mind, view all the scenes. Here he'll find the girl of his dreams. There before him, high on a throne, reigning queen of love all his own. Floating in dew, dreams coming true. Hear him singing. Dear one, at last you are here. In bowers of roses, your beauty reposes. Look through the faces and I'm standing before you. You know I adore you. Some night when I long to hold you. In my aching arms will be
crowding, let me through. I can't see her, she's gone. Please let me through. I must see her again, just once. Help me find her. Help me find my love. She was here a moment ago. Now she's gone. Where are you? Love is calling.
Hear his mournful cry.
People, banners, brutal manners. Fifty loving, confetti shoving. A break in the cloud. Drops from a cloud.
And there in the street, he stops and her feet sing.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here she is, Fanny Bryce, as Baby Snook. Tonight, Daddy, played by Hanley Safford, is going to appear in the annual play at his lodge. Daddy stands in front of his bedroom mirror, dressed as Romeo in doublet and red tights. He's appraising himself. Listen.
Bring on your Juliet. Mm-hmm.
Guess I got a pretty good pair of legs for tights. Yes, sir, pretty good. Now, let me see. Guess I'd better rehearse. He jests at scars that never felt a wound. But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? 'Tis the east, and Juliet is the sun. Arise, fair sun, and...
Oh, Daddy.
Oh, Snoop.
What you doing?
I'm going out. I have to act in a play at the lodge.
Ain't you gonna get dressed?
I am dressed. The way I'm going to act.
In your long underwear?
No, these are tight. I'm wearing a costume.
Why?
Because everybody in the play has to wear a costume. Back, 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 back.
All right. Daddy!
What is it?
What you got on your face?
Oh, nothing at all.
It looks red.
Well, I put on a little makeup.
Why?
Oh, to make me look more handsome.
Then why don't it?
Oh, what's the matter? Don't I look all right?
Uh-huh.
You sure, sir?
I think you look very pretty, Daddy.
Well, run along, Snooks. I have to rehearse.
All right.
He jested scars that never felt a wound. But soft. What?
Daddy!
What is it?
Who are you talking to?
Oh, nobody. That is, I'm talking to Juliet, but she's not here.
You feel all right, Daddy?
I feel fine. Now go to bed.
I want to watch.
Now listen. The play goes on in half an hour. I've got to rehearse my part and get over to the lodge.
Why?
Because 600 people have bought tickets to see me act.
Is you going to act?
Yes.
In front of all the people?
Yes.
In your long underwear?
Yes. Yeah. No. I told you these were tight.
They look loose, Daddy.
They do not. They fit me like a glove. What are you talking about? Are they really loose?
Uh-huh.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh.
Where?
I don't know.
Oh, stop that nonsense. Now go on to bed. I haven't got a minute to waste.
All right.
But soft, what light through yonder window breaks?
It's Mommy taking a bath.
Oh, keep quiet. I told you to go to bed.
I'll be quiet, Daddy.
'Tis the east, and Juliet is the sun. Arise, fair sun, and kill the envious moon, who is already sick and pale with grief. Well, what are you laughing at?
'Cause it's funny.
Oh, it's funny, eh? The greatest tragedy that ever happened. Two whole families ruined. Five people killed, and all on account of one girl. Well, now what's the matter? Charlie Bellone, I have to go on soon, and I don't know my part.
Why?
Because you won't let me rehearse.
I ain't doing nothing.
Well, leave me alone.
All right.
But stop. But stop. What light is on the...
Daddy.
Oh, to think I wanted twins. What is it now?
I'm sleepy.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good girl. Mm-hmm. Now, come on, darling, then. Hop right into bed. Daddy'll tuck you in.
All right.
There. Now, good night. Sweet dreams.
Good night, Daddy.
Good night.
Daddy.
Oh, yes?
Tell me a story.
I haven't got any time. Go to sleep. All right, I'll tell you a story. Now, listen. Solomon Grundy, born on Monday, died on Saturday, buried on Sunday. That was the end of Solomon Grundy. Good night. Well, what's the matter? Well, I'm in a hurry.
Why?
I told you I have to get to the lodge. I've got to act in a play.
What play?
Romeo and Juliet.
What's it about, Daddy?
Oh, look. If I tell you the story of Romeo and Juliet, will you go to sleep?
Uh-huh.
All right. But no interruptions. Now, remember.
All right.
Now, once upon a time, there were two families by the name of Montague and Capulet. The Montagues had a son named Romeo.
Who had?
And the Montagues. They
what
had...
What did they have?
A son. His name was Romeo.
Romeo?
Romeo's.
Who's he?
Their son.
Whose son?
The Montagues!
Ah!
Now, Snooks, you promised not to interrupt. Will you let me finish?
Uh-huh.
All right. I had a daughter whose name was Juliet, and they loved one. They always...
Who loved?
Romeo and Juliet. But the Montagues hated the Capulets.
Why?
Now, how do I know why? Romeo and Juliet get married. So his best friend...
Who's best friend?
Romeo's. His name was Mercutio. And he...
Romeo's name was Mercutio?
No, he was his friend.
Who's friend?
Romeo's! Mercutio was very rich and influential. He always wore an ermine cape.
What's that?
Oh, it's a very expensive fur. It's like down. His whole coat was down.
Were his pants down, too?
Paris, Lestrange, I'm not going to waste another second with you. I'm leaving, you hear me? I'm leaving. Now, goodbye. No. Oh, what's the matter with you?
Nothing, Daddy.
Well, aren't you going to call me back?
No, Daddy.
You mean you...
Mommy, Daddy fainted.
Now here's Warren Hull. Take stage, Warren.
Thanks, Bob. Friends, of the three advantages you get in the new Maxwell House coffee, you will probably notice the improvement in the blend first. Wherever you are, north, east, west, or south, you will hear people say...
Up here in the Iron Range country of northern Michigan, the warm satisfaction you get out of this new Maxwell House sure helps on a cold day.
Of all the coffee in New York, I like the new Maxwell House for that rich, full-bodied flavor. Riding the range at 20 below is no snap, but a steaming cup of this new Maxwell House sure hits the spot.
In my judgment, nothing can touch the exquisite aroma and the cheery stimulation of the new Maxwell House.
Not until you try the new Maxwell House can you truly appreciate the difference the new blend makes. How much smoother and richer this famous coffee really is. We say that knowing millions thought Joel Cheek's original secret Maxwell House blend the finest ever. The difference in the new Maxwell House is truly amazing. 12 expert coffee blenders spent 8 months before they found the way to enrich the blend that had made this coffee world famous. Then, too, another big advantage is that you get no bitter coffee due to parching, no weak coffee due to under-roasting. For the remarkable radiant roast process roasts each bean evenly all the way through, evenly inside and out, so you get more of the true flavor of these superb coffees. So if you want clear coffee, coffee that is really fresher, smoother, richer, with a wealth of cheery stimulation in every cup, won't you try the new Maxwell House? It comes in the same blue super vacuum can you've always known. Ask your grocer for a pound at today's low prices. This is the time to make friends with Maxwell House.
Every so often, a song comes along with a melody that's so sweet and simple that everybody likes it. Meredith brings you one of them tonight. A new song written by Vaughn DeLeith, Charles, and Nick Kenny, popular columnist of the New York Daily Mirror. It's A Lonely Trail.
Standing at the crossroads, don't know where to travel. Roads of rock and gravel don't lead me anywhere. Just the smoothest highway somehow isn't my way. And nobody seems to care. It's a lonely trail when you're traveling all alone. It's a lonely trail when you're just a rolling stone. With a lonely star to guide you, and a lonely heart inside you. Like a ship without a port to call your own. It's a lonely trail when you haven't got a friend. And the road before you never seems to end. What I would in my life's trouble, if I could only travel double. It's a lonely trail when you're
Congratulations, Nick Kenny. A lovely number. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we continue with the balance
of our... No, I don't want to fight. It's absurd to settle anything with fisticuffs. This whole orchestra is nothing but a gang of aborigines.
What's the matter now, Frank?
Well, there's a chap in Wilson's band. I don't know what instrument he plays, but he's got a face like a tuba.
That's the tuba player. What about him?
Well, I was sitting in the studio next door all by myself meditating. It's vacant, you know. And all of a sudden, this chap's wife, a comely, well-constructed girl, in a disturbing sort of a way.
Frank, won't you ever learn?
Bob, I had nothing to do with it. This girl came into the studio and accidentally sat down in my lap.
Accidentally?
Yeah.
400 empty seats in there and she sits in your lap.
Well, it could happen to anybody. This was before her husband turned on the lights. Oh, Bob, jealousy is a terrible thing. The green-eyed monster has broken up many a happy home.
Oh, sure.
Would you believe it, Bob? That poor deluded tubist, well, he imagined that I was holding his wife's hand.
Well, weren't you?
How else could I tell our fortune? Well, of course, if I'd had my Hindu crystal ball with me, I'd have known her husband was coming.
Hindu crystal ball?
I'm the only white man who ever plumbed all the secrets of Hindu mysticism. When I was in India, the Brahmins chose me to initiate into the yogi philosophy, to lead to the heights of nirvana. Believe me, it was with real humility that
I... Oh, Frank, Frank, stop making like a Hindu or I'll throw you out the window. He can do it, I guess.
Allah Akbar Ben Hassan Ali, young man with teeth like walnuts and nose like the cabbage plant, thou hast the wisdom of the stables, the gall of the groom. Kismet, I have spoken.
You have spoken?
Yes.
Who are you trying to fool with all this Hindu stuff, Mr. Morgan?
Mahatma Morgan, sir. The Rajah of Rajput, the sepoy of Singapore, and the Wak of Sarawak. To every caste in India, I am known as the greatest faker of them all.
You got the same title in America.
Thank you.
Frank, I don't want to get personal, but what were you doing in India?
Well, I was sent to the mother of all countries by the Society for Investigation of Psychic Phenomena, the London Psychological Society, and the Psychic Union of France to fraternize among the Indian mystics.
What did they want you to find out?
Who's going to win the Rose Bowl game? That doesn't fit here, but it's timely. What I really went there for, Bob, was to find out the secrets of Indian hypnotism.
You're a hypnotist, too, huh?
Oh, the best.
Well, can you do it here?
I could if I had a weak-minded subject.
Well, what are you looking at me for?
Meredith, have you ever been hypnotized?
No.
Oh, that's fine. Bob, would you mind turning down the lights a bit? Yeah. Well, thank you. Now, Meredith, come close to me.
Yes, Frank.
Gaze into my eyes. I am your master. Gaze into my eyes. Gaze into my eyes.
Gee, your eyes are pretty, Frank.
Silence! I command, you obey. I am the master, you are the slave. You are sleeping. Your senses are becoming numb. You are sleeping.
Shall I act like I'm sleepy now, Frank?
Silence! Gaze into my hypnotic eyes. You will do exactly as I command. You are sleeping. Your lids are heavy. Your muscles are relaxing. Say to yourself, I am very sleepy. I cannot stay awake. I must sleep. I am sleepy. What time is it, Bob?
Nice hypnotizing, Morgan.
I didn't feel anything.
Oh, go away. Bob, I'm going home. I don't feel psychic today.
Frank, come here. Come here. This is one time you're going to prove your words or eat them. You better do a big hunk of Indian magic or I'll expose you to the world.
Bob, any time but now. Someday I'll be glad to show you the famous Calcutta hat trick, but today...
Do the hat trick.
No, don't be silly. Where will I get a hat?
Do the hat trick.
The hat trick.
Yes.
You mean the hat trick?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I'll need a little...
Oh, he's going to do it.
From the audience here.
If there's any gentleman in the audience who would do me the favor of stepping on the stage here, because I can't perform, How about you, sir?
Oh, now, wait a minute, Frank. What are you doing? Frank!
Will you please come up here?
Please
that's
don't
right.
Come up.
Step right up here.
There's
a stairway right on the right.
Thank you, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, before anything happens,
I'd
like to go on record that neither Maxwell House nor MGM will be responsible for anything Mr. Morgan's about to do.
Stand right over here. That's all. Just keep quiet, Bob.
Oh,
what?
Morgan.
How do you do? what's your name? No, just speak up. I mean, we have... yes, speak right up now, right now.
Fred Stunk.
Fred Stunk. You've never thought of having it changed, have you? Well, it doesn't matter. Never mind that. Would you mind? I'd like to borrow your hat for a moment.
I just bought the hat. I paid $5.
Well, that's
Frank,
quite all right.
What are you going to do with a man's hat?
I am going to produce, from the inside of this gentleman's hat, ladies and gentlemen, a stack of steaming wheat cakes. Here, just hold the hat, Bob.
You're going to what?
I've got to... Please, my table,
you
if you don't mind.
Cakes,
yes, now that's all right.
Oh, Frank, what do you... Where'd she come from?
Where'd
you get her?
Well, she's very... I didn't expect...
Oh!
Her.
Signs and everything.
Thank you very much. Well, there we are.
Oh, look what he's got on the table. Eggs,
yes.
Flour, sugar.
Please,
if you don't put syrup.
Could I have my hat, please?
And now it's quite all right.
Holy.
I'm going to return you your hat in the perfect condition that it was received.
Oh, I'm afraid
now,
to look.
In the first place, we take two eggs.
Oh! You got more on me than you have in the hat.
More?
You can't. What are you putting the milk in there for?
A little flour.
Oh! Put Worcestershire sauce in the pancakes.
Angostura bitter.
They told me all I had to do was announce numbers.
And a little
stuff.
Look out!
We're getting more of a yard and a half. What's the matter with you, anyway?
Quite all right. Just, please tilt it to the audience to see that it's in the hat. I mean,
running over.
You spilled half a wheat cake. Yeah. Yeah. Well, now. Never mind.
Frank.
Never mind.
Frank, come here.
What?
Have you ever done this trick before?
The one with that. No. It's quite all right. I told you, and I promise you, sir, I am going to produce from this hat a stack of steaming wheat cakes, and I will return it to you in the perfect condition that it was received.
Yes.
Here. Now, we place a nice linen napkin over the hat. There. Now, sir, would you mind just breathing three times on the hat?
Don't breathe too hard or I'll fall down.
That's one. That's two. Now, one good hard one. That's it. Splendid.
Oh, this is awful. I don't know.
Ranfo, tanfo, hocus, pocus. Wheat cake!
Wheat cake.
Frank.
Frank.
You know, something went wrong.
Yes, I don't understand it. I don't, it worked out all right on paper. Well, I'll see you fellas later. I've got to go out and get a stack of wheat.
Oh.
Well, Mr. Stunk, I'm awfully sorry about this. I don't know quite what to say, but, well, here's your hat.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you coming up.
I didn't know he was going to put it on. Meredith, play. Do something.
Well, what have you there, Warren?
Well, Bob, I've got here a jingle written by a loyal Maxwell House fan. Her name is Miss Margaret Davis of 164 South Harrison Street, East Orange, New Jersey.
Well, let's hear it.
Oh, here it is. And it's swell. No air can get in, no flavor get out. That is a story worth shouting about. Maxwell House coffee is my favorite brand.
And you will agree it tastes simply grand.
Well, that is swell, Warren. I wish we had a lot more like them.
I do too, Bob. And if our friends want to send any in, we'd sure like to have them. And now, friends, the clock says it's time for our familiar Thursday evening custom. So pull up your chair to our circle of friends. Here's your steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House. And yours. Will you have sugar? Cream? All ready, Meredith. We pause briefly for station identification.
KFI.
This is Bob Young again, and we continue our Maxwell House Good News of 1939 in the MGM Concert Hall, where Meredith Wilson again asks the question, if all the music in the world were suddenly destroyed and you could choose just one composition to hear again and preserve, what number would you choose? Tonight's selection is the combined choice of a science teacher at an Eastern university and a patron of the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra. They have chosen one of Tchaikovsky's immortal melodies, The Lovely Waltz of the Flowers. Maxwell House presents the MGM Theater of the Air, and we welcome a charming lady whom we last welcomed more than a year ago. Since then, she's been across the Atlantic Ocean and back, making a picture I'm sure many of you have seen by now and enjoyed, The Citadel. It's certainly grand having her here with us again, Rosalind Russell. Our presentation tonight is one of the most celebrated stage successes ever to appear on the legitimate stage. Edgar Selwyn, MGM's producer-director, has selected Bayard B.A.'s famous drama, Within the Law, which Mr. Selwyn himself produced and directed in its initial and successful run on the Broadway stage, Within the Law.
The scene, the elaborate offices of Edward Gilder, multimillionaire owner of the Gilder's department store. Gilder has been greatly annoyed over the frequent reports of missing merchandise in his store. Some of the missing merchandise was found in the locker of Mary Turner, one of the salesgirls. Mary defiantly declared her innocence, but a jury returned the verdict of guilty. The judge debated sentence, but Gilder, to set an example for other employees,
requested the full penalty of the law. On the strength of her promise that she will tell Gilder how he may stop the theft in his store, Mary Turner, played by Rosalind Russell, en route to prison, is granted an interview with Gilder, played by Russell Hicks.
Mr. Gilder, district attorney told me to bring this girl here on my way to Grand Central.
Come in. I'm very sorry about this, my girl, but you were given a fair trial.
You call it fair when the only lawyer I had was a boy the court told me to take. A boy trying his first case, getting experience, they call it. Yes, getting it at my expense. Was it fair for you to come down to the court this morning and tell the judge I ought to be sent to prison as a warning to the others?
You mean...
Oh, I heard you. It wasn't did I do it or didn't I do it. It was to be a warning to the others. Oh, Mr. Gilder, this card is my judge. You're sending me to jail for 3 years for something I didn't do.
The thieving that's been going on in this store for over a year has got to stop.
Well, sending me to prison won't stop it.
Then tell me what will.
Give the girls a living chance, to be honest.
What do you mean by that?
A living chance to get enough food and a decent room to sleep in. Do you know how we girls live? Of course you don't. Three of us in a room doing our own cooking over a two-burner gas stove and our own washing and ironing these evenings after we've been on our feet all day.
I've provided chairs behind the counter.
Have you ever seen a girl sit on one of them? Well, have you? Of course not. Because she knows the manager of the department would think he could get along without her and she'd be fired.
What?
When you're real sick and have to stop work, what are you going to do then? Do you know what the first time a girl who was honest feels? Sometimes it's often because she needs a doctor or some luxury like that.
Oh, so that's the plea you're going to make for yourself and your friend, that you were forced to
steal. I wasn't forced to steal, and I didn't steal. So that's the plea, as you call it, that I'm making for the other girls. There are hundreds of them stealing because they don't get enough to eat. You asked me to tell you how to stop the theft. Well, I've done it. Now won't you do something about it?
Are you blaming me for
this? You are to blame. You and all the others like you who won't pay a living wage.
Oh, what's the use? Take her away, officer.
Oh, he can take me away, all right. But there won't be a day or an hour that I won't remember that it was your word that sent me to prison. And you're going to pay for that. You're going to pay me for the 5 years I've starved making money for you. You're going to pay me for everything I'm losing today. You're going to pay for this. You're going to pay.
The years passed. 3 long, hard years in which Mary Turner had nothing to think about except a way to repay Gilder for sending her to prison. Then she was released and set out to avenge the prison term Gilder placed upon her. Money came easily for Mary, for she hired an unscrupulous lawyer to show her the way to swindle and yet stay within the law. She gathered around her the only friend she knew, those she met in prison or through other convicts, and pledged them into her new life. Then Mary arranged a meeting with Gilder's only son, Dick, played by Robert Young, who fell madly in love with her. We find Mary in her apartment following another of her clandestine meetings with Dick.
Come in. Why, Mr. Gilder. And Inspector Burke.
Well, well. Come in, gentlemen. What can I do for you?
So you're the woman.
Oh, I'm the only woman here, so I must be. What do you want?
I'm informed that my son is infatuated with you. And Inspector Burke here tells me...
I tell you, she's an ex-convict.
Is this true?
It is.
You'd better leave it to me, Mr. Gilder. Now, see here, you...
If you please, Inspector. Of course, you don't really care for my son. So how much will you take to go away? How much?
I don't want money. Inspector Burke can tell you how easy it is for me to get it.
Do you want me to tell my son what you are?
Why not? I'll tell him myself.
I'd rather he didn't know. I've spared the boy all his life. If he really loves you...
Excuse me, the door.
Well, Mary, I... Oh, hello, Dad. What are they doing here?
Tell your father the news, Dick.
Dad, we're married. Mary and I were married this morning.
What?
I married your son this morning. Do you understand that, Mr. Gilder? I married him.
It's a frame-up. Do you know what she is? She's done time and she'll do it again.
That's a lie.
The truth. I served 3 years.
Now, what did I tell you?
Now, do you see what you've done to my boy?
And what is that compared to what you've done to me?
What have I done to you?
Do you remember what I said to you the day you had me sent away?
I don't remember you at all.
Don't you remember Mary Turner, who was arrested 4 years ago for robbing your store, who swore she was innocent and who would have gotten off if you hadn't asked the judge to make an example of her?
You're that girl?
I am that girl. You helped smash my life. You put me behind bars. You owe me for all that. And I have just begun to collect.
And that's why you married my boy.
It is.
It's not.
Now, see here.
You keep out of this. This is my affair. You married me because you loved me.
I didn't.
And you love me now.
No, I don't.
Look me in the face and say that.
I don't love you.
Just the same, you're my wife, and I'm going to make you love me.
You can't.
I'm going to make you love me. I don't care what you've been. From now on, you'll go straight. You'll walk the straightest line a woman ever walked. You'll put all thoughts of revenge out of your heart. Because I'm going to make you love me.
She's no good, I tell you. She's a crook.
And if I am, who made me one? You can't send a decent girl to prison and have her come out anything else. Mr. Gilder, 4 years ago you took away my name and gave me a number. Now I've given up that number and I've got your name.
Inspector Burke tries every way to pin something on Mary, but she is always within the law. Burke, played by Donald Douglas, finally decides to frame her and Joe Garson, an ex-convict who has been a partner with Mary in many of her schemes. He sends a stool pigeon named Griggs to Mary and Garson with a scheme to rob the Gilder home of a fortune's worth of tapestry, but Mary refuses. However, when Mary is gone, Garson agrees to go in on the job. Inspector Burke waits until the night of the robbery, then has Mary informed that Garson is in on it, knowing that she will rush to the Gilder home to try and stop the robbery, and Burke will have her trapped. The scene, Gilder's library. Griggs and Joe Garson, played by Bernard Nadell, and a couple of thugs have quietly entered and are about to get to work when Mary enters.
Mary, you shouldn't have come.
Fool, this is burglary. How can I protect you if you're caught?
Kid, we're here now and we're going to stay.
Joe, for my sake.
I can't go till we've got what we're after.
But there are reasons why I can't have you rob this house. Now let's get away. Please, please, Joe, for goodness sake.
I'm going to see this thing through.
Joe.
It's settled. We'll all get away in a minute and you'll come with us. Red, you get to that door. If anyone comes in, get him and get him quick. Don't give him a chance to cry out.
Okay.
Now, let's get to work.
Listen to me, Joe. If you do this, I'm through with you. I quit.
If this goes through, we'll all quit. That's why I'm doing it. Come on now, boys. Push that table against the wall there so I can stand on it.
No, no. No, Joe.
I hear something. It's coming this way.
Turn out the lights.
I got him.
Dick.
Good Lord. What are you doing here?
You don't understand.
I understand this. Whether you ever did before or not, this time you have broken the law. You're in my hands now, and these men as well. And unless you do as I say, I'll jail every one of them. You men, give me a few moments with Mary to state my case. Whether I win or lose, you go free. And I forget everything that's happened here tonight. Tell them I can be trusted.
I know that.
You must listen. Your very safety depends on me. Suppose I call for help.
You'd only call once.
Well, maybe once would be enough.
Okay. Red, you go into that hall. Don't take any chances with a whistle. Come in and tell us if you hear anything. If we're rushed and have to make a quick getaway, see that Mary has the first chance.
Right.
And make it quick, remember.
Oh, Mary, can't you see you're throwing away everything that makes life worthwhile? Why didn't you protect yourself? Why didn't you go to Chicago as you'd planned?
Planned? With whom?
With Inspector Burke.
Burke told you I planned to go to Chicago?
Yes.
When?
Less than an hour ago.
Where?
In this room.
What was Burke doing here?
Talking to my father.
Joe, turn up those lights. I want to see the face of every man in this room. Dick, how much are those tapestries worth?
$200 or $300. Why?
Never mind that. How long have you had them?
Ever since I can remember.
Then they're not the famous masterpieces your father bought?
Well, I should say not.
Oh, it's a trick. Come here, Griggs.
He's lying to you. They're worth $500,000.
You stool pigeon. You did this for Burke.
Oh, no. No, I swear I didn't.
You came to me yesterday with this plan from him.
Oh, I swear I didn't.
It's a frame-up.
Well? Well, what of it?
I'll get you for this. Drop that whistle.
Give me that gun.
Somebody's opening the front door.
Street's empty. We've got to jump for it. Come on, Mary.
She can't make it.
But if she's caught...
She won't be.
If she is, I'll get you, so look out. Come on, boys.
Mary. Mary.
I've never seen a man killed before. He was standing right there a moment ago, and now he's...
Hands up, all of you. Why, hello, Bert. What are you doing in his house at this time of night?
Why is she here?
Why shouldn't I be here? I'm his wife.
Again, I ask you, what are you doing here?
I had business here with your father. Where is he?
In bed, I suppose.
What's that? Cassidy! Cassidy! Stay right where you are, both of you.
Yeah, what is it, Chief?
They've got Griggs.
Got Griggs?
So now it's murder, eh? Where's the gun? Hand it over. Search him.
Yes, sir.
Here it is.
Well, what's this? What's happened?
Dad.
Cassidy, you and Thompson, take them both downtown.
Not her, you don't want her. It's all wrong.
No, don't talk, Dick. Don't talk.
What did you expect? Either you killed Griggs or she did. Did she kill him?
Good Lord, no.
Then it's you.
It isn't.
Now, one of you killed him. Did she do it?
I told you no.
Did he kill him? I'm talking to you, Mary Turner. Did he kill him?
Yes.
Mary.
So
Oh, that's your revenge.
I don't want revenge.
But they'll try my boy for murder.
Oh, no, they won't. They can't.
What's the reason we can't?
Because you can't convict him.
Can't, eh? There's the body. The gun was found on him, and you just said he killed him.
Quite true. But that man was a burglar, and he shot him in defense of his home.
At police headquarters the following day, Inspector Burke and Gilder Sr. are trying to get the truth out of Dick.
If you shot Griggs in mistake for a burglar, why did you try to hide the fact? Why did you pretend that you and your wife were alone in the room? Why didn't you call for help for the police, as any honest man would have done under the circumstances?
Dick, we're trying to save you. If you won't speak for your own sake, do it for mine.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dad. But I can't.
All right. I'm going to give him the time to think things over. Perhaps he'll understand the importance of what we've been saying. Now, young man, you want to do a lot of quick thinking and honest thinking. When you get ready to tell me the truth, let me know. Say, Dan, have one of the other men take him back. You wait outside.
I want to know about my wife. Where is she?
You'll know all about your wife, young man, when you've made up your mind to tell me the truth. Take him away, Dan.
You bet.
Well, Inspector?
Yeah, sit down, Mary. I want to talk to you. Now, I'm going to be your friend.
Are you?
Sure. Give up the truth about young Gilder. I know he shot Griggs, but I'm not taking any stock in the burglar story, and no court would either. What was back of the killing? Was he jealous of Griggs? He was always a worthless young cub. A rotten trick like this would be just about his gait. Why did he shoot Griggs?
He didn't.
And why did you say
he did?
That's
all I'm going to tell you. But I'll fight you today and tomorrow and to the end of my life with Dick Gilder.
Then who did shoot Griggs? We got every one of that gang all except Garson, and we'll have him before the day's over. They're sure to squeal, so you'd better beat them to it and tell me the truth. If you do, I'll give you every chance in the world.
Ha!
I mean it, Mary. I'm on the dead level with you. Tell me the truth. Who shot Eddie Griggs?
That's for you to find out.
Hey, Chief, we've got Garson.
Fine, bring him in. Now, Mary, you're going to hear something. Sit down, Garson, and listen.
What's she doing here?
She's under arrest. Charged with the murder of Eddie Griggs.
That's a lie. I did it.
No, Joe. No, don't talk. Please don't talk.
Joe has talked.
But he did it to protect me.
Dan, send Williams here to take Garson's confession.
He's not going to confess.
No use, my girl. I told you I'd get you. I'm going to try you and Garson and the whole gang for murder. Every one of you. Gilda will go to the house of detention as a witness. Come on, Joe.
If I come through, will you let her go?
We'll spend every dollar we can raise.
Now, it's no use. He said he did it. Now that we're sure he's our man, he hasn't got a chance in the world.
Well, how about her and young Gilder? Do they go clear?
We'll get the best lawyers in the country. We'll save you, Joe. We'll save
you. You can't, Mary. They've got it on me. My time's come, and I can save you a lot of trouble.
He's right. We've got him cold. What's the use of dragging you two into it?
They go clear. They ain't even called as witnesses. Is it a deal?
You're on.
Then here goes.
Joe.
Mary, there's no other way. I'm going through with it. My name's Joe Garson.
Alias?
Alias nothing. Garson's my moniker. I shot English Eddie Griggs because he was a skunk and a stool pigeon, and he got just what was coming to him.
Anything else?
No, nothing. I croaked him, and I'm glad I done it. He was a skunk, and that's all true, so help me.
That's all, Williams. You'll sign it just as soon as you've transcribed the notes. Young woman, it's just like I told you. You can't beat the law. Garson thought he could, and now...
That's right, Mary. You can't beat the law. And say, you want to cut out that worrying about me? I ain't worrying. I'll bet there'll be a lot of stuff in the newspapers and my picture in most of them, huh? Hey, Inspector, if the reporters want any pictures of me, could I have some new ones taken? The one you got of me in the gallery is over 10 years old. I grown a mustache since then. Could I have some new ones?
Sure you can, Joe. I'll send you right up to the gallery now.
Thanks. Well, so long, Mary.
Joe.
That's all right. Gilder will look after you. Gee, I'd like to see you two have a couple of kids playing around the house. Take good care of her, won't you, Bert? Well, so long.
Porter!
Yeah,
what's delaying this train? It's 9:35 right now.
According to my watch, only 9:32.
All right. Can I get any cigarettes on the train?
Yes, in the club car. It's one car ahead.
Thanks.
Porter! Door 108, please.
Yeah, right here, ma'am. Watch your step, ma'am.
Drawing room A.
Yeah, it's right here, the first drawing room.
Come in. Mary.
You're running away.
How did you find me?
I called your father at his office.
Well, the train will be moving in a minute. You'd better get off.
I'm staying right here.
You can.
Why not? We're married, aren't we?
Well, I'm going to Chicago to get a divorce.
So am I, unless you get off this train right now.
Oh, but Mary, what else can I do? You said you didn't love me.
Vic, darling, can a girl change her mind?
Can she? Oh, Mary. Porter! Yes, help me get these bags off the train. Hurry! Tony Martin returns to treat you to a musical preview. For the first time on the air, he sings This Night Is My Souvenir by Harry Warren and Gus Kahn. It's from the new MGM musical, Honolulu, with Eleanor Powell, George Burns, Gracie Allen, and yours truly. Once again, the singer, Tony Martin, the song, This Night Is My Souvenir.
Singer pretty, Tony.
All right, Bobby.
This night was made for dreaming. This night was fashioned for you. This night my arms enfold you. My eyes have told you that I adore you. This night is filled with music. My heart will always hear something for sweet remembrance. This night will be my maybe nights again as fair as this that I'll remember when I fondly reminisce. Though there be other nights in years to be, this is the only night, the night of nights for me. This wonderful night was made for my dreaming of you. This wonderful night was fashioned for roses and you. This night my arms enfold you. My heart has told you that I adore. Keep on adoring you. This night is filled with me.
Tony. And now a word from Warren Hull.
Many of our friends write to tell us how much they appreciate the way we pack Maxwell House in the super vacuum can. Here is an unusually interesting letter on that subject from Mr. R.A. French, who writes from Panama City, Florida.
As agent for the Dutch steamship Palembang, loading here in Florida for South Africa, I was asked on board one day by the master to have a cup of coffee. I remarked that I had been in a number of foreign countries myself, but that in my opinion, the best coffee in the world was served in the USA. To my surprise, the captain said, I agree with you. And although I will proceed from South Africa to Java and will not reach my home port of Amsterdam until March of next year, I purchased in New York to take home to my wife 48 pounds of Maxwell House coffee, as I find it the best I've ever used.
Thank you, Mr. French, for that interesting letter. And friends, just stop to think a moment. those 48 pounds of Maxwell House purchased in New York will be just as fresh 5 months later in Amsterdam, Holland, as the hour they left the roasting oven. You see, the new Maxwell House is taken fresh and fragrant from the roasting oven and packed in the super vacuum can from which all air is first removed. Then that can is sealed under vacuum. No air can get in, and no flavor can get out. So you're assured of coffee not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. Tomorrow, ask your grocer for a pound of the new Maxwell House in the famous blue super vacuum can. It's richer, smoother, more delicious than ever, with a wealth of cheery stimulation in every cup. All the family will agree that now, more than ever, it's the coffee that's good to the last drop.
And now, by way of a parting thought for the day, our entire Good News cast joins Frank Morgan in the optimistic reflection, there's a sunny side to every situation. Frank, start us off.
Thank you. Long ago, one fine day, some philosopher was heard to say, there's a sunny side to every situation. And the same applies to you. His philosophy is still true. There's a sunny side to every situation. When you're broke through and through, folks can't borrow anything from you. That's what we call the law of compensation. When it's raining cats and dogs, think how nice it is for frogs. Every situation has a sunny side.
Sing tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, the sun may never, never shine, but tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, from where the weather's fine.
Oh, I get the idea, Frank. You've no dough, so relax. You don't have to pay an income tax. You've no job, so just pretend it's your vacation. Though some eggs are dark outside, they look different when they're fried. Every situation has a sunny side. Meredith, what do you do when things go wrong?
Well, I'll tell you, Bob. I just strike up with a song. You know, there's nothing like a little syncopation.
Pretty.
And if I should miss my cue, I'll just smile and say, pray do. Every situation has a sunny side.
Sing, tra-la-la-la-la-la-la, the world is better than it looks. So tra-la-la-la-la-la-la.
It's your turn, baby Snooks.
When I'm left home, all alone, I can play with the telephone. And I call up all of Mommy's poor relations. And politely, I will say, won't you come and spend the day?
Every situation has a sunny side.
Sing, tra-la-la-la-la-la-la, the sun may never, never shine, but tra-la-la-la-la-la-la, somewhere the weather's fine. So we say au revoir with the tra-la-la-la-la-la, and we hope we've given you some relaxation. If this program hits you right, listen in next Thursday night. Every situation has a sunny side.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, on our Good News Maxwell House show, we bring you a full hour of gaiety, charm, and music filled with the holiday spirit. You'll hear Lionel Barrymore, Reginald Owen, Gene Lockhart, Catherine Lockhart, Ann Rutherford, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Tony Martin, Meredith Wilson, Bob Young, and that lovable braggart, Frank Morgan.
I object.
Quiet, wheat cake. Nicely said, Warren. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the highlights of next week's program will be a special radioization of Charles Dickens' immortal Christmas Carol. It will be presented by the same cast who appear in the new MGM picture of the same name. You will reawaken old memories as once again you laugh with cheerful Mr. Cratchit, cry with poor little Tiny Tim, and hate and then love old Ebenezer Scrooge and all the others. And by the way, if you're wondering why you didn't hear if men went Christmas shopping as women do on tonight's program, here's the lowdown. The boys are waiting for a big pre-Christmas sale to get some real bargains. But you'll hear it for sure next Thursday night. It's truly a show you won't want to miss, so please join us. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. This is Bob Young saying good night. Thank you. Warren Hull saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is KFI Los Angeles.